Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. It is a pleasure to have you aboard our last panel before the fun drive. The fun drive begins Monday morning at 6 a.m. and it'll be an exciting one. Alan, are you all ready?
I'm here. I'm getting ready. I'm I don't know.
How do you get ready?
I don't know.
You rest.
First you get, you know our wonderful Pete. You know, our wonderful Pete used to say that if you weren't nervous before a performance, it wasn't going to be good. And I think part of it is nerves. You just get a lot of nerves. And you begin to think in your mind, what might work, what might not, where everybody is, what they're thinking. And then you remember that we have the best group in the world supporting this radio station. And they don't have to be motivated. They know what to do. It's just great.
We will get started on Monday morning, bright and early, and if you want to help out before then, and why not join the fun? We have a great lockbox already. It's WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and you can do your part right now, and all of that will count to the first day of the drive, and it's looking really good, so we want you there.
Hey, really good. Over $400,000 in the lockbox. It's unbelievable.
It's really incredible. Absolutely incredible. So we're looking forward to a great drive, and it'll all get started on Monday morning. So today we will talk about some wonderful, the interesting issues that we'll discuss this morning. Alan Chartok, of course, with us. Rosemary Armeo from the University at Albany and investigative reporter and Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us. It's a pleasure to have you all here. Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
Mm. Always a delight. So let's talk about, there was an article in the New York Times this morning about companies like Walmart and Apple are among this group of businesses that have agreed to revamp their hiring practices to avoid discriminating against applicants who have been out of work for a long time. This is ultimately to help in President Obama's effort for the long-term unemployed. And President Obama has been able to persuade some of the nation's largest companies, including General Motors and Ford, as well as the ones I mentioned earlier, to revamp their hiring practices to avoid discriminating against applicants who have been out of work for a long stretch of time. And this seems like good news. My interest is how ultimately it was able to, how you're able to persuade companies to do such.
Yeah, he's also been working to get companies to voluntarily raise their minimum wage too,
right.
And he's had some success on it. Rachel Maddow did quite a long show on this last night. The president's always had power of persuasion over companies.
Go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, Mike. I just was to say I'll never forget when President Kennedy called the steel companies in.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
And he jawboned them. And they walked out with their tails between their legs and announced that there would not be a price rise that the president was angry about. You know, you don't want to fool with a guy who, you know, can do federal contracts and everything else.
These are new hiring practices. The president will make the official announcement today. Chief executives will appear with the president today at the White House, including Motorola, eBay, BlackRock, Morgan Stanley, Boeing, Bank of America, Marriott, McDonald's, and Walgreens.
Now, is this an acknowledgement that companies have, in fact, discriminated against the long-term unemployed?
That's interesting.
I mean, by showing up and saying we are not going to discriminate against them, does it sort of confirm what has been observed for the last year as being one of the biggest problems with people getting back into the workforce? The longer you're unemployed, the less employable you are. And how fair is that? That just seems like such an injustice.
It's also a relatively new problem, right?
Right.
Employment since 2008 has gotten deeper and deeper. It's not something that has existed for a long time.
I mean, there's been a articulated belief by some employment, experts, some people in hiring, that there's a greater risk at hiring somebody who's been out of work longer. You may have to retrain them. They've been away from the job longer. They're not as used to the action. You get somebody who lost their job a couple of months ago or even more recently, and they're more primed to go back in the workforce. And I just think that's outrageous. I think somebody who's been unemployed a very long time is really motivated to be back.
Yeah, they're going to be very eager to get there and stay there and do a good job so it doesn't happen again.
And one of the things about the about this initiative that I found really interesting is that the White House officials say they don't really know how many workers ultimately will be helped.
They stop counting them.
Have numbers on this. Right. Only the fact that studies have shown that whether this is deliberate or not, and not always deliberate, but companies tend to look askance at applicants who have been without jobs for many months or even a year or two, and will pass them over.
It's kind of a risk in a good way policy for the White House to take. It follows along with Obama's plan to do what he can without having to rely on Congress. This is a way to tackle the jobs issue without needing any kind of vote from the House Republicans. It's pretty visible. It's hard to be against this program. You know, what can you say about that? Fits in with the...
You know where it
go ahead. I'm sorry, Alan.
I'm sorry. You know where it's really bad is in the academy. I'm sure you've seen that. You know, somebody gets a PhD, and if they're not employed in a couple of years, they're done. Yeah. They may get an adjunct job. They may get an adjunct job, you know, for much less money. But they're done, and there's a real prejudice that I've seen, you know, when I used to be on those hiring committees about people who have been out of work for a long time.
Yeah.
It's a bias that I guess the notion is that if someone is unemployed for a long period of time, therefore, there must be a reason. It must be their fault. They must not be good enough to get a job. And that's just absurd in the economy that we've had. When whole classes of jobs have just disappeared, companies have gone bankrupt, companies have just hired offshore to replace entire classes of people. This has been a brutal experience in the last 5 years. And to take that approach is, it's just unjust.
It's also one of those things, and we've been talking about this, Rosemary, throughout the week, about negotiating and working on deals.
Right.
And here's a matter where this information was brought to the president's attention last year. The White House began looking for ways to combat the trend. They met with business executives. They invited them to the White House. They had their initial thoughts. They brought them in May for a meeting to discuss the matter. Over the summer, they began to draft a set of best practices to change the employer screening processes. They went back to the companies. Mm-hmm. They offered input, and here we are.
Yeah, it's Obama doing what he said he was going to do, using his phone to reach out to people and do things. I think I know I'm in favor of it. It sounds like we all are voting thumbs up on this.
Yeah, and it doesn't require legislation.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank God.
The House of Representatives doesn't have to vote
on it. They would have found some way to be against this. You know?
They can't be upset.
Americans,
although even News Corp has signed on, oddly enough. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more stories and your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Maya Kaimal Fine Indian Foods, makers of Madras Curry and other simmer sauces by local cookbook author Maya Kaimal, available at Adams Farragher Farms, Honest Weight, and other food shops, mayakaimal.com. Oblong Books and Hudson Valley YA Society, presenting Lucy Christopher, Len Vlejos, and Margot Froley, Sunday, February 2nd, 4 p.m. in Rhinebeck, RSVP required, oblongbooks.com. In The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. And we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. There will be an interview that will be broadcast on CNN today, and it was taped yesterday, in which the president signaled that he might accept an immigration deal that does not include a special pathway to citizenship for those in the country illegally, possibly meeting Republicans in the middle on an issue that has divided them for several years. Mr. Obama and Democrats have long insisted that legislation overhauling the immigration system include a pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants who pay fines and back taxes and meet other conditions. Activists and many Democrats have called that non-negotiable. In an interview that was taped on Thursday and aired Friday, the president seemed to hint at finessing the difference as long as such immigrants could still apply under the regular citizenship process once they were legal. Speaker John Boehner and other House Republicans on Thursday released a statement of principles on immigration that would not include the citizenship pathway, but would allow such immigrants legal status.
Look, it's step one. There's no question. The president gets all kinds of credit. Let's assume that in the last presidential election, Hispanics went wildly for the Democrats and not for the Republicans. Now they're going to see the Republicans are the ones who insisted that there be no path to citizenship. The president gets good marks for getting something done because, after all, you don't want to get picked up on the street and put into a car. We've seen it here in Great Barrington and sent away. You never see somebody who's been here for 13 years again. That's a huge relief to be able to make sure that that doesn't happen. And in the meantime, once that happens, there'll be some changes in the way in which this thing works. Believe me, it's just step one.
Do you think that, Alan, that non-documented aliens, whatever you want to call them, I know there's a lot of debate about what to call people who are here illegally. Do you think that if they don't have a path to citizenship, that they won't be motivated to come forward? You know, they won't see the advantage and they'll be like sub-citizens and that's not appealing? Or do you think that'll interfere with that?
Well, you know, Mike, they are sub-citizens right now, and they have to be scared and they have to be worried. They're worried about their families. They're worried about their kids. They're worried about people in schools. So the question sort of answers itself. What would you rather do? Be walking around along the street, looking over your shoulder every minute and worrying, or hold out for something like citizenship in the immediate future, as opposed to long run? I think the president wins on all sides. He gets if the Republicans actually take this thing, which I have my doubts about. He ends up the winner. They end up the loser from a political sense. And the people who have been scared to death start to feel a little bit better about their safety. Yes, they would be sub citizens, but I think it would be better for them, and I think they'll think it's better for them than what exists now.
It's I like that analysis, Alan. I think you're right. And for me, I teach immigration at UAlbany to my students. In international reporting, it's very interesting that not until just before the Civil War, around 1850, there were no rules whatsoever on immigration. This is a country of immigrants. We let anybody in. We didn't check. There are no records on who came from what country. Not until 1850 did we begin to pay attention to who was coming in. And interestingly, then you could not come in, you tended to be restricted if you were, get this, a prostitute, a criminal, or a Chinese worker.
Mm-hmm.
So these rules let
us. Some things never change.
Yeah, these rules have always been about prejudice and misconceptions of who people are. It's a very interesting history of legislation.
It really is.
Yeah, I think the House will go for it. I think because of what you said, Alan, they saw the results of the last presidential election, and they need to come out on this one and be more. Come to the middle of the road, so to speak. But there's an enormous economic advantage by allowing this to happen. Even if they are not going to be full citizens and there's not an easy pathway to citizenship, these people who are going to be registered and documented at this point will have to pay taxes. They'll have to be part of the economic system. There's a big underground economy right now, and this will bring it out into the open, and there'll be a benefit to society.
The president
We're
is
talking billion. Yeah.
Yeah.
president is quoted in the New York Times today of saying that what I'm encouraged by is the fact that Mr. Boehner and others seem to recognize our country will be stronger if we're able to resolve this issue in a way where, you know, kids, for example, who have grown up here and for all practical purposes are Americans but don't have the right papers are not being punished.
Right. This one seems the easy part. As you said, Alan, a first
step.
This is an easy one. I mean, who really can justify sending back kids who have never known anything else but the United States to some really foreign to them country?
So where do we go to step two?
Oh, I think once
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, once you see how this works down the road, you know, it'll be easier to convince even conservative members of Congress that it makes sense to now offer that path. So I think the path is not off the table. I think it's just put on the shelf for right now, but it can come back on to the discussion after it's demonstrated that this is the right thing. I think this is a good interim step. It's positive.
Yeah. There's not a lot of empirical evidence that immigrants cost us money, that all the prejudice we have, they cause crime, they take up benefits from welfare and other health programs. It just doesn't really happen.
And then why couldn't we have done this years ago? I guess that's the question. Why couldn't we have this step one when this process started?
Well, it's always been so wrapped up in politics.
Yeah, everybody wants to be in and then close the door behind them. They don't want someone to come in and take away their job or take away their opportunity, I guess. You know, it's just been the way it's been.
But it is interesting that the Hispanic community feels unified in that even the people who are here, who have their papers, who did it the old way, they're insulted when the government says to people who don't have the papers, so that's not I'm the last guy in. And Rosemary, you know about this because you teach it. There is a sort of unification of spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even people, immigrants who are well beyond having to worry about their legality, still have and actually might be more of Republican voters. They still feel very strongly about this. At least that's what the polls show.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue with many other issues. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable and our Roundtable panel for the morning. And Rosemary Mayo is here, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and it's a delight to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you'd like to join in on our conversation. Mike, you have some interesting stories from the pages of the TU.
Yeah, the one I think that's a good topic to discuss is that there's a proposal in the legislature now. It's got bipartisan support. Democratic Assemblywoman Patricia Fahey in Albany and Senator Hugh Farley, a Republican from Niskayuna, a veteran state senator, are proposing a bill that would give school districts and superintendents some flexibility in how they handle kids who are suspended from class. And it opens up a bunch of options that are better than just keeping a kid out of class. Sometimes a kid will get suspended for, you know, not following the dress code, for acting up in class, for not coming to school on time. And, you know, if a kid's not coming to school on time and you say to him, well, you're going to be punished, you're going to be sent home.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
It's no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
And that's exactly what they said. It becomes like a reward, Assemblywoman Fahey said.
And basically, you're saying more Xbox for you.
Yes, right. Exactly. But under this kind of no-brainer, as Senator Farley describes it, it lets a superintendent take a student and maybe put them into a community service. You know, maybe they'll have to clean up after somebody someplace, or maybe they'll have to do something that's not so desirable, and learn something valuable. But it has it's been a big topic across the country, and it tends to, surveys show, affect minority students a lot more. Students in poor districts, like 16% or 18% of kids get suspended in Albany and Schenectady, which are large inner city school districts, and in Guilderland, for example. example, according to this story today, you know, maybe they'll get 2% who are suspended over the course of the year. And it makes kids miss class. It forces them to fall farther behind in their program. They often drop out. Kids who are suspended for long periods of time, it just doesn't work, and something else has to happen.
She's right. This is a no-brainer thing. I don't understand why it's taken us so long to get this far, but you have kids who are not doing well in school, so you cut them off from school. Better to, I like the idea of community service, if there's real community service jobs. We don't have a lot of those.
Maybe they should.
So you need to work at that, and make them study more.
Go to school.
Gifted teachers who are going to say, okay, you're not paying attention. Let's go over this. Let's learn some more stuff rather than less.
Okay, but what happens if the kid really acts out? Start thinking about
that. There are programs for kids who really act out, Alan. They go to alternative schools.
Well, not so fast, because alternative school, we used to call, when I was a kid, reform school. And once a kid went to reform school, it was like on their permanent record that they had gone to prison.
No, that's not how it is anymore.
It isn't anymore. I know that. But I'm saying, I want to take the part of the teacher for a minute. They've got 30 kids in a class. They're trying their best to maintain order. A kid acts out. I mean, I heard from one friend who said that the kid came up and spit in his face. You can't have that. There's got to be a way of making sure that those children who are doing that are, and by the way, you can't say to that teacher who has 30 people in her class or his class that it's okay, you know, to give them extra time. Those teachers have no extra time.
Well, Alan, that the whole system is set up for the teachers. Those students are gotten rid of. But let's look at the bigger picture. Who gave them 30 students in the first place? That's too many to deal with. If we had a decent education system, we would not have 30 kids, many of them who act out in the same classroom. And we would say, okay, fine, you throw the kid out. That takes care of the teacher's problem. What does it do for society's problem? You've got a kid who's now no institution. At all is watching him.
Now you've really got me.
Let's go.
What about? You say it's only for the teachers. No.
Yes,
it's for the other 29.
This is a teacher-friendly policy.
As Mario used to say, excuse me, the other 29 kids in the class are suffering as much as the teacher because nothing gets done while the kid is acting out.
But once you take those kids out of the class, then what do you do with them collectively to take care of the problem, to take care of those kids and to take care of society as a whole?
Right.
I agree with you.
It's a plan to grow sociopaths. That's what it is.
Right.
You're throwing them out on the streets. The cops don't watch them. The schools don't watch them. Their parents aren't watching them. They are a rootless class. It's just a policy that does not work.
Well, so what's the answer again?
Well, it's to find another. It's to find another way to deal with kids who are suspended. It wasn't necessarily to keep them in the classroom, but to, when they are suspended, rather than send them home to play Xbox, I think, as Joe pointed out so well, and kind of reward their misbehavior or their tardiness or their it's like, if someone doesn't come to school, we're going to send you home when you come here because you should be punished.
And a lot of the a lot of the suspensions aren't because, and yes, there are certainly those cases where they're spitting in the face and so forth, but a lot of it is just truancy. You're just not showing up.
Truancy and zero tolerance policies that our schools have adopted over the last 10 years.
I don't like what you're wearing. Go.
You had a pen knife, I'm throwing you out of school. Mandatory suspension for 2 weeks.
Right.
That's not a kid who should be left
under this bill. A superintendent could assign them to do community service. Maybe some of that community service would be cutting the lawn at the school. I mean, you know, it might have.
Oh, great, more knives.
And what is your learning? And what are you learning? And Mike and Rosemary, what are you learning when you're cutting?
What you're learning is that you are still part of a community, even if you are misbehaving. You are not thrown out. You're not sent out as a pariah. You have to learn to get along. And if this bill is, if you call it again, a first step, if it has schools working with community organizations, that's more than we have right now. We operate in separate domains right now.
Well, that's good. But Rosemary, what about zero tolerance, which everybody on the panel other than me seems to be throwing out?
I hate them.
Isn't
very stupid.
I understand.
We have principals. Well, we have superintendents who can exercise discretion. That's what we hire them for.
Well,
we put a rule in that says no matter what, you have to go. You have a little bit of pot or you have a pen knife, you're out of school no matter what. Crazy.
Well, you know what happened? You know what happened in New York City when, I hate to say this, Giuliani and others adopted zero tolerance for going under the subway turnstile or for squeegee stuff? Crime fell dramatically. You think that isn't true with a young person also? In other words, if you cross the line, you have problems. Now, I'm with you guys on alternatives. I think Pat Fay, he's very smart. And there have to be alternatives, but we have to pay for them. And paying for them is something that a school district like Albany is going to have a lot of problems with.
Well, you could start talking about state aid, but we'd be going down a different path, right?
That's right.
The inequities of how schools are getting aid. But at least they would have something alternative to just having a kid go home or sit in a classroom all by himself. I mean, they don't achieve anything. They just make the problem worse. And I'm glad they're talking about alternatives.
If this happened, for example, to my kid or really to the kids of anybody on this panel, they would be sent home. They'd be punished and disciplined and taken care of by their parents. But let's be honest, in Albany and other inner city districts, the kids who are acting out, who are causing these big problems, go home to parental structures that are not really there. They get nothing. They don't have it at school. They don't have it at home. And community services have not hooked into them. Not until they commit some sort of terrible crime for which they end up in jail do they become part of the societal structure again. I think any measure that tries to form some, however weak, a safety net, is better than what we have now.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue with a story or two. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York. Specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry and gifts, joyellsjewelers.com. And Harney & Sons Fine Teas, specializing in tea for over 30 years, offering 200 different varieties of tea, accessories, gifts, and more in Millerton, Soho, and online. Harney.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is Mike Spain, Rosemary Arameo, and Alan Chartok. And we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Story I wanted to mention, I thought was an interesting one from New York City and in the New York Times, where a sharp break with New York's crime-fighting policies of the last decade. Police Commissioner William Bratton has told his top chiefs that he intends to fundamentally alter a program that sent waves of rookie officers into crime-ridden neighborhoods, but also inflamed tensions in minority communities. At a closed-door meeting in police headquarters in January, Mr. Bratton said that rather than thrusting inexperienced officers into dangerous or highly charged situations, part of a program known as Operation Impact, he envisioned a return to a more traditional approach where rookies would first be placed in local precincts. I want to change the dynamic of kids coming out of the academy and immediately be putting into Operation Impact assignments where they really have an almost single-minded focus and really don't get a full flavor of the job. And to me, this seems to make sense just from what I have read, because, I mean, experience counts for something, doesn't it?
Well, when you're carrying guns, it really counts.
Yeah.
It seems to me this is a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a de Blasio
Palace.
Let
me put it this way.
Sorry, Alan.
Let me put it this way. No, I'm sorry. Let me put it this way. If you are a person, a minority person living in a crime-riddled area where we know that black-on-black crime, for example, is among the highest in the city, and you want your kids protected in the projects or in another place, you want the best protection you can possibly get. This is offset, as you all know, by stop and frisk, which the mayor and the police commissioner say is going to be severely modified, which is, of course, a terrible thing for the child of somebody of color. So if you are in that position and the crime rate goes up, not down, and your kids are at more risk, and the projects become less safe, are you really sure that it isn't a good idea to saturate an area with officers of any kind?
Yes, but I think the question was, is a rookie right out of the academy equipped to go into that kind of a situation and apply sort of a theoretical approach to law enforcement to the more practical approach that a veteran law enforcement officer will know the community. And you know, it in many businesses, you like to send the rookies into the tough jobs so they learn the business.
Right. Trial by fire.
Right. And that's okay maybe in some other professions. But in this particular case, you really do want the veterans, the people with experience who know how to relate to the community, with whom the community may already have a relationship, to work with them. But, you know, the toughest jobs are maybe working in these neighborhoods that you described, Alan. And, you know, in a lot of cultures, the tough jobs go to the new guy, and the people who've earned their way up on the food chain get to do an easier job.
Let's talk about the kind of cops you raise, you develop when you take a rookie right out of school and put them in the worst areas of the city to police. They're going to have a very skewed vision of what policing is. And they're tough. They're suspicious. They are the adversary. Whereas if you're in a community-based practice, if you will, you're going to learn about referrals, about listening to people.
Just like a reporter, knowing your contacts, knowing who to talk to, knowing where
to go.
How about just
like a school teacher? Do we tell our school teachers
that? We said that, yeah. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, I haven't quite finished that.
We were talking about the same idea. Alan is out of the studio today, so it's funny you're coming to the same conclusion we did.
Yeah, well, but the point really is, if you take a school teacher, take Teach for America, which both my kids participated in, they get thrown, basically, they have a couple of weeks, but they get thrown in, and these are the best and the brightest, I really mean it, get thrown into horrendous situations where they really have to cope or not, and they learn to cope, and they learn fast. And I think it's not either or. You could take a veteran police officer and pair them with somebody who is just new on the job. And
yeah, I think I think there have been some television series focused around those very scenarios.
I watch it every day.
Adam 12
every day.
Yes.
You know, and that's true. And that works in the classroom. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the veterans have to tap your resources if you're the police commissioner. I think this is a recognition that, you know, to send unprepared rookies right out of the academy into the toughest situations without good guidance and shepherding is not good for anybody, and it will not produce a good police officer down the road. It needs to be in other words, it's a recognition that when you graduate from the academy and you're sworn in as a police officer, you've still got an awful lot to learn and to become a good policeman.
Yeah, I think it's not
a
great...
Let me just say that there are people at the other end of things who are adult, more adult, and who are really up there, and some of them don't act as social workers, as Officer Kropke might say.
I don't know. If I lived in one of these areas, if I were a resident, I would not want a bunch of rookies running through my neighborhood there
but,
to
I mean,
protect
that's
me
just,
and my children.
That's just one issue of it. The other part of this is to have the officer learn the precinct, to have the officer in the area,
right.
to have the
know
officer
the people,
learn
the
ropes
streets, yeah.
of the area that they're going in. Instead of taking them out of that community, they're eventually going to serve, put them somewhere else,
right.
Scare the hell out of them, and then bring them back.
What? Do you think that's good or bad?
I don't like that idea. I think it's better to keep them in the communities.
Right, right, right.
It seems to me that this is a good plan that they've come up with. But
another thumbs up from the panel.
Yes.
Yeah,
Alan?
It's looking very positive what's going on in the city with New York City with the police department. And
let's see what happens to the crime rate. If the crime rate goes up, de Blasio is done. And Bratton is done. If the crime rate stays the same or goes down because it's at historic lows, then I think they're going to get a lot of credit.
Harsh.
We're going to, we
Indeed.
Only have about 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left, and I want to just talk about the big game this weekend, the Super Bowl, and we don't have to talk about the game itself unless you want to, of course, but this is literally, this is pretty much in our backyard. This is a New York, New Jersey Super Bowl.
That's right. It's in New Jersey.
It's a NYNJ on the logo. But all of the activities seem to be, and all the broadcasts seem to be on in New York, and then the actual game, of course, taking place in.
Well, I just hop over the river to watch the game, but,
that's
but
right.
yeah, it's been a big boost for
yeah,
New
you. Yeah, you got to go, but remember, you have to go through Fort Lee to get there.
There's tunnels, also. Well, it was. It was thought that this would be a big economic boom, to the city and to the metro area, and it's turning out to be pretty exciting. I know that, our James Odato at the Times Union had a story earlier this week about how much New York State is spending on tourism money to promote this, and that created a little bit of debate. But it is an opportunity to show off the city and to show. A lot of fun. And have you seen the TV of people coming in Times Square down these giant toboggan runs that have been there?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little silly, but it is a lot of fun. And it leaves people with a really positive
Super
impression.
Bowl economics is a field of study. It's pretty interesting. And what they have found is that it does bring a lot of money in. Not as much, however, as you're always projected. It's about one-fourth of what people will say.
Yeah.
Oh, we have to get it. Here's what.
Yeah, but let's not turn that
learn.
Down. Right?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
New York
but they have,
New
but
Jersey.
The seat. But the seat sales haven't been going that well, which is interesting.
Well,
usually it's sold out immediately.
Well, it is sold out. The stadium is sold out. There is a secondary market for the tickets, and where those tickets were $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 traditionally in warmer climates, they are now still the cheapest ticket for a Super Bowl ticket in a nosebleed section a mile from the stadium, and the field is about $1,500. So.
Stay at home with the snacks and you see the commercials. I don't get the appeal of this.
But they already got their money.
I must have read the wrong story in the newspaper, which I saw, which said there were still seats. So,
well,
so
if you want to go
from the brokers,
if you want to go, you can go. But as far as the teams go, and as far as
the
Meadowlands and the NFL, they already got their money because they sold everything out, and so now it's a secondary market that's working on the tickets.
Yeah, the markup isn't as high as it might be in Florida
cold.
Or someplace.
Right, and
I'm interested in how little I've read about security at this one.
I think they got a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, they have a lot but it's interesting. It's a great point, Rosemary, because other than what we were talking about yesterday about the
prostitution,
an 11-month investigation culminated this week when they arrested
18 people.
I don't know.
We can all
protecting
safer.
All those tourists,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. We love hearing from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC. Is anybody rooting for anybody? Anybody care?
Kind of like.
I'm going to start rooting for them as soon as I. Yeah. I'm going to start rooting for them as soon as I find out who's playing.
Oh.
Okay. Well, it's the Seattle Seahawks and the Denver Broncos. I'm with Mike. I'm going to go with Denver.
I like
Denver.
I sort of like Seattle.
Yeah.
I like
okay.
their helmets.
There you go. Excellent.
All really good reasons.
All good with good reasons. I'd like to see Peyton Manning, the great.
great player, deserves another ring on his finger. So we'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, we'll see you Monday morning bright and early for day one of the fun drive. Rest up. Have a great weekend.
Can't wait.
We'll be off, but good luck.
Good luck. We'll be listening.
And you guys will be the first ones we call when we say, oh, my God, the fun drive's over. We need a panel tomorrow. So stay by
hope
your phones.
Soon.
Waiting for
yes,
the call.
We hope that's soon, too. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.